The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Listening to We the People Radio, minus one Elizabeth Woodward.
Hey, I'm here. Don't say that.
Bill sitting in for Elizabeth.
Hey, you're not Elizabeth.
But he looks kind of like her, doesn't he?
I'm more like Johnny Fever without the hair.
He's got his Hawaiian shirt. I'm like, that'll be a great shirt for this morning.
Oh, and I want to compliment you on your shirt, too. Wearing black this morning, except I can't see an awful lot of your face. I'm a little offended by that.
There's tons. Hey, so We the People Radio brings you another two-hour program on Sunday morning here. We will be talking about stealth jihad. We've got a group of folks from Southern California who did a little homework into their school curriculum at their local elementary, or I guess it was junior high, seventh grade. And they discovered that Islam was being portrayed in a way that actually had some inaccuracies. And Christianity was taking a backseat with some corresponding inaccuracies. So we'll have them on here as soon as they call us, because mostly I've been emailing with them. So we'll wait for them to call. So sitting in for Elizabeth, because she's in San Diego goofing off or something. And, oh, yeah, I forgot about the chat room. See, I don't do this part. This isn't my part. Elizabeth, Bob, help me out when I forget stuff. Okay, so you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us, and when you go there, you will see a link that says listen, and when it pops up, you'll get the chat room, and there's always some sparkling repartee on the chat room. That's all I'll give you.
Sparkling repartee, is that what we're calling it now?
Yes, that's what we're calling it now. So we've got Bill. He's usually our assistant. He handles our coffee and the front door.
You know, I'm getting an urge to go make coffee right now.
It's too late. Bob already made coffee.
Oh, there's the phone bell.
Yeah, he already told us when we start talking. He goes, I'm going to crawl under the desk. I have to unplug this thing. So it's another action-packed morning this morning.
Get the joys of static electricity this time of year when the wind kicks up.
Oh, I thought it was me.
Knocks your computers out, and it's great.
Oh, yeah, the screen is kind of dark. We'll have to stall for time. Hey, so anyway, if you'd like to join us in the chat room, like I said, wethepeopleradio.us. It also will give you all the information on today's show and the folks that are going to be on with us. We have Linda Sachs, Jim Friedman, and Mike Hyuton, and they are, Linda. She has a BS in engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She is kind of the person who got this thing started. We're going to let them tell you all about it. And then Jim Friedman, apparently he is the comic in the group, so we'll find out about that here pretty quick. He has a BA in economics and a Juris Doctorate from Rutgers. Jim's a retired securities attorney. And let's see, then we scoot down here on the webpage. We've got Mike Hyuton. He's a BA in political science and communications from the University of Southern California. Juris Doctorate from South Texas College of Law. And he has here in his bio, after law school, never practiced, so I limited the harm I could do. He helped take a meat processing company, Royal Quality Foods, out of Chapter. These guys have done a variety of interesting things, and I guess they all live in the same neighborhood as a guy that we met down in San Juan Capistrano. At a tea party meeting, and he called me up out of nowhere and said, hey, I've got these people. You got to get them on. So was that then, Bob?
I'm just playing engineer on the floor here. Yes, Mike is on the phone, ready anytime we are.
I wasn't sure who was on the phone. Now that you're off the phone, I got to find out who's on the phone. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Aaron. How you doing?
Hey, good.
All three of us are on the line here. It's myself, and it's Jim Friedman and Linda Sachs.
Nice, and I just gave a little bit of your bios. Well, today it's me and my husband, Bill, who's sitting in for Elizabeth, who you've never met, so I guess you won't miss her, and Bob, our engineer, whom we would all miss because then we wouldn't know how to do anything because we're in a room with a lot of buttons. So, how do you guys, we gave a little bio on each of you, but I didn't talk to them in complete terms about what got you guys started on this. I just mentioned that you guys went and looked at the textbooks. So you guys want to give them the 411 on that?
Yeah, since Linda kind of brought the project to us, I'll let her give the history of how we got involved.
Hiya, Linda.
Hi, nice to meet you, Aaron.
Nice to meet you, too. So you started all this work for everyone.
Well, I sort of got interested in this by, I'm a real reader of Investor's Business Daily every morning, which is a great newspaper that has excellent editorials. And so I started to read the editorials and started to notice that they would mention that Muslim clerics were visiting, you know, junior high schools, and that classes would be visiting mosques, and kids were asked to role play as Muslims in their seventh grade world history classes. And I got curious about what they were teaching. I knew that in California schools locally, they taught Islamic history in the seventh grade. So I got curious about what the textbooks might be saying about Islamic history since probably 2001, and probably earlier, actually. I became much more curious about Islamic history and about the religion of Islam, and had, you know, established a pretty good size library. And when I visited the school, they said that if I came back, I think I visited in the spring, and they said if I came back at the summer, they'd actually just loan me the textbook, which I then did, and read through the entire unit, which is two chapters, from a book that is called World History, Medieval to Early Modern Times, by the publisher Holt. And I read the chapters and was immediately sort of surprised at how the textbook seemed to have a very whitewashed, glossed-over version of the history, and had inaccuracies in it, had some surprising errors in it, and I wanted to find some people who could work with me, maybe, and bring it to the attention of the local school.
Nice. Now, when you say there were like surprising inaccuracies, what qualifies as a surprising inaccuracy?
Well, let's see. A couple that come to mind are that they really, all they said about jihad, for example, was they said it is a concept in the Quran. We'll go into details later in our discussion today, but they said it's a concept in the Quran, and they said, you know, they stressed its meaning of inner struggle. And then it sort of had the also-ran definition of holy war. But then the unit never addresses it again, as though it was never a practice in Islam. And there's much other information which we can give you about the real meaning and use of jihad in the history of Islamic history.
So it skipped all the killing part?
Yeah.
Just kind of skipped that part.
About how the purpose of jihad is to spread Islam far and wide, and the purpose of jihad is to establish Sharia law.
Sure.
So this was kind of just not connected for the kids, and not at all made clear. That is a real, from our point of view, with current world events in the world that we're living in today, that's a terrible and egregious fault in the teaching of Islamic history.
Wow. And that's a biggie, and you hear it a lot on the news, and to skip over that, or to gloss over that, actually, does the kids a huge disservice, because then when they hear that, when they hear any of that, I guess, actually, in the news, they think it's kind of a nice thing, or an innocuous thing, I guess.
Right, or a thing that is just new. It's just these Islamic radicals and rogue terrorists, and, you know,
that's true, too.
That has nothing to do with, 14 centuries of history, and it clearly has a lot to do with the 14 centuries of history, and it has to do with Islam from its very origins, that is, under the leadership of Muhammad.
Wow. And were you involved with Act for America back then?
No, I was not.
You're just a regular person going through life, had plenty to do.
a very curious person. And so then, after that, though, I knew Mike at that point. We were in a book club together. And I knew Mike and Jim, both, from the book club. And Mike, you know, at some point decided he was going to start an ACT chapter in San Diego. Okay. So when he started the ACT chapter, I mentioned this to him, that I had done this, looking into this, and I'd like to come and speak to his ACT chapter and see if I could get, perhaps, he had even Muslim people in his chapter, at least one Muslim woman that I knew about, and I thought it would be a good idea to have happen to be Jewish, to have a Muslim, a Christian, and a Jew working together on looking at this textbook, and I wanted to go. That was my idea at the time. I wanted to go and ask them if they would actually work with me on doing a more comprehensive analysis of the textbook.
That's
of the chapters on Islamic history.
And see, I wonder how many, how many of the books, well, do we get into that later? Because I guess the thing that I'm thinking, but maybe jumping ahead, is how many of the books throughout the state are teaching the same thing?
They are very, very similar in their teaching. Some might be better than others about, for example, teaching treatment of women, or some might be better than others about explaining some of the brutality involved in history. But basically, they've all been massaged, it seems to me, and we now have quite a bit of background about that as well. There's a very fine book called The Trouble with Textbooks, and that book documents the really origins of how Islamic history has really been taken over by Islam promoters, I'll call them, not teachers of history.
Aaron, what we discovered was we chose the book that was being used in our particular school district, and so that's what we focused on. But since then, we've had an opportunity to look at a number of books that have been accepted in California. And actually, our book is not as bad as some. There are a number of books that are much more dramatically out of step with reality and facts than ours. But this is the one that we chose, and there's some other books we plan on analyzing as we go forward. And I think, as you know, about a month ago, ACT for America came out with a much more comprehensive analysis of 38 separate textbooks from all over the country. And they have an executive report, doesn't work, executive report of 35 pages that was sent to 70,000 school board members all around the country. And then they have a link from there that they can go and see the full 250-page report. And within their report, the book we analyzed is also referred to. What's a little bit unique about our situation is that California, the book adoption process is in suspension because of financial problems. So there could be no new books, history books in California for 3, 5, 6 years, for quite a while. So since we actually created a supplement, which people can look at if they go to asecureamerica@gmail.com, we have an actual document that we want to be used in the classroom until they're new textbooks. And then there's a whole other subject of when they go through the adoption process, which we can talk about later, because as it stands, pretty much the same kind of thing is going to be republished time after time unless there's some changes, either a grassroots change putting a lot of pressure on, politically, or somehow on the publishers, because the generic kind of misinformation that we're criticizing is being put into textbooks all over the country, and it looks like it's going to remain that way unless there's something done about it.
Holy cow. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we should probably fill in the blanks for people on what ACT for America is, since I didn't do that while we were phone answering with you earlier. I just mostly talked about you guys' background, but I didn't actually speak about the organization that you've jumped in with. We've got links to all that on the website as well, so go to wethepeopleradio.us, and you will find everything there. You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. You are tuning in to listen to, we've got, hold on, I need my list. We've got Linda Sachs, Jim Friedman, and Mike Hyuten. Did I get that right, Mike?
You got it right. Perfect.
I thought so. I'm like, I thought that's what he said, but I should have written myself a phonetic clue there. We've been chatting with these guys about the representation of Islam in textbooks around, well, around the state and around the country, but specifically in San Diego, where they kind of got started. Before we move into what Act for America is about, Bill had a burning question, and I had to silence him.
Well, I think Linda touched on it just a little bit, but how far back does your research go? When did this actually start being introduced into the textbooks? Do you know?
Well, that's a good question. I don't remember it when I was a kid.
Yeah, I have this book that I mentioned, The Trouble with Textbooks, documents that it goes back at least as far as 1990.
Wow.
Recently, I've found references that it goes back into the 1980s. But a Muslim parent in California started an organization called the Council on Islamic Education, which has now been stealthily renamed.
Of course.
We'll use the term stealth in our discussion with you, and you'll begin to know what we mean by that. But stealthily renamed the Institute on Religion and Civic Values.
That
sounds so much nicer.
It does sound so much nicer. It's
yeah,
much more friendly.
It sounds like it covers
peaceful.
All religious concerns.
Of course.
But in fact, it only covers Islamic religious concerns. And in my opinion, Islamic religious concerns, unfortunately, and I even have some evidence of this from a Muslim Brotherhood, a major Muslim Brotherhood leader of the middle of the 20th century, Saeed Qutb. He wrote a book called Milestones. And it's quite important that Muslims control the teaching of history. Whereas teaching of subjects like chemistry, physics, biology, and some of the sciences, more, as they refer to them in his book, abstract sciences, can be taught by Muslims and non-Muslims, Muslims must, you know, control the teaching of history.
Of ethics, course. Any knucklehead can do chemistry, but if you're going to talk about history, you better get somebody who really knows what version they want.
Exactly. And who to blame and who to credit and all these other things.
Yeah, no jihad here, just move along.
Right. One of the things that I think is a little bit unique about what we've done and the analysis we wrote up is we really bent over backwards to focus exclusively on historical accuracy and fact. If the people read our analysis, they'll see that we don't accuse anybody of anything. We don't make it a religious issue. We don't make it a political issue. We don't make it a partisan issue, because our attitude is if the kids are given the accurate facts, the historical facts as we know it, then the vast majority of the time they're going to come to the proper conclusions. And we do this too because we're appealing to academics to make changes. So the important thing is to focus on, okay, what were the facts, what actually happened, and then we can draw conclusions from that point.
And is Jim hiding in there? Is he?
Yeah, here's Jim right here. What, to be perfectly frank,
we gotta know
here.
Now.
One of our phones died, so we're handing two phones around, three people.
Yeah, and I always get the dead phone because I'm the oldest and the best looking.
Well, you know, you're not that old. You knew the phone was dead, so that's good. As long as you can still tell the phone is dead, then you're fine.
Yes, as long as it's just the phone and not me, but who knows?
Exactly. So, so how do you fit into all this, Jim?
How do I fit into all this? Well, essentially, I am a retired attorney. And when I was practicing law, I did securities work. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but basically I worked for the state of Arizona as the assistant director of securities and investigator. My job was to look through various prospectuses, documents, papers, to find out the accuracy of what was going on. Then I went into private practice, and I was in it for over 40 years, doing the same thing for other law firms and for clients. The idea is to find out, is what they claim, is it true? And I can tell you, after looking through the material here, it was the easiest thing in the world. There's nothing hidden. They basically decided to leave out the actual facts, and we'll talk about that, exactly why. And we found the facts, and it's no great mystery. And it's very sad, because what happens is the students come in, and they absolutely have no concept of what really went on. And if I could add something else, it's interesting. I gave a speech yesterday before a retired veteran officers group, and a couple of the men there were very interested, and they were telling me about their grandchildren who were homeschooled, and they said they didn't have any background in this, but they looked through the books, which was not the ones that we use here, and they said over and over it was clear that there was distortions. They just weren't quite sure what to do about it, and so they gave me their number, and I'm going to call them back and give them the information. So the point is, this is all over the place.
So even in the homeschool curriculum?
Yeah, the homeschool curriculum. It just, you know, people just don't seem to understand the problem. It's something that they don't want to face up to.
Jim,
so what we're trying to do is to help them do that.
Well, one of the questions I get from folks is Islam a political ideology or is it a religion?
It's both. And they make it very clear. The religion, the Sharia law, and the religion covers everything. So whereas Christianity and Judaism would put up with separation of church and state, whatever, it is not the fact in Islam. And they make no bones about it. The religion covers everything. They say it and they do it. But what happens is you have the United States where so many people are dancing around like a maypole and they're so happy and they're so friendly to everybody. They don't want to believe that. There was a fellow by the name of Robert Conquest. I'm going to paraphrase him. He was a historian. And he was talking first about the Soviet Union and then about Islam. And what he said essentially was, look, we in the West have a certain framework. We have a mindset. The idea is that we can work things out and take care of things, and that'll happen. And he said, the problem is that we take this mindset that we have in the West and attribute it to other people, like the communists, like the Islam. And what happens is, because of that, we end up with programs and solutions which are based on illusions. And I think that is a very, very important thing. The more people understand that we're dealing with somebody who's not friendly and is not happy with us, the more we wake people up, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah, exactly, because otherwise it is a complete stealth program and we've completely opened the door for it.
Exactly right.
You don't have to be really stealthy.
Well, we don't want to offend anybody, though.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, you don't have to be too stealthy. It's kind of like burglary, you know, if you leave your door open and then go upstairs and go to bed and your stuff's missing in the morning.
That's a good analogy.
Got very little reason to be surprised. Hey, any of those links that you guys are telling me about, do you have the ability to email from where you are right now?
Hold on. Here's our email guy.
Hold on.
Right now. Yes, yes, we can email something to you right now. Okay. We're at Mike's home, and he can get on a computer.
Yeah, well, what would you like emailed?
Any of the links that that you want people to... I had somebody say, well, now, what was the link with your document and all that kind of thing? And we can list links on the webpage for people.
Okay, we'll get that to you within about 15 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, no problem. So as we're chatting along here, any of the links that we talk about or things you think might be useful or helpful, shoot them to us, and we'll make sure that we add them onto the webpage for the program.
Great.
Especially for those people who are not sitting there with a pen in their hand. And they're going, I hate when they give out all this information. How am I supposed to remember this? That's usually me in the car driving. So quick break, Bob. How are we doing?
It's time.
we always get a little screwed up on the breaks in the first hour because we haven't had enough coffee to be on track. We'll be right back with you guys. You are listening to We the People Radio. You're listening to Linda Sachs, Jim Friedman, and Mike Hyuten. We're talking about Islam. Be right back with you in 2 minutes here at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. You are listening to us here at KCNR 1460 AM. You can call us at 530-605-4567. And if you wait until 2 minutes of 10, we're not taking your call. So you have an hour and 22 minutes to figure out how to call 530-605-4567. But it never fails. Someone always calls at 2 minutes to 10. I think they're probably the same people that go to restaurants like 1 minute before they close too. Anyway, we are here with Linda Sachs, Jim Friedman, and Mike Hyuten down in San Diego land. And they're huddled at Mike's house. Is that where you guys are?
We're huddled at Mike's house, correct.
They're huddled over at Mike's house because we had to get them on one phone line.
So didn't you say Elizabeth was down in San Diego land?
You're right. Mm. Elizabeth is down there, and she's probably down the street. Wouldn't that be bizarre?
Well, I hope she doesn't think I'm messing up her bit.
Trying to steal her gig. you know, on this, we're getting a couple questions in the chat room that I figured we'd better ask you. We do need to know what ACT for America is, so I wrote it down finally because I know I'll forget. But people have been asking in here, you know, do people call you guys Islamophobic, and when they accuse you of things like that, and how are you qualified? Let's see, I'll read their question. So you have an opinion on the truthfulness of how Islam is portrayed in the textbooks. What makes you an authority, and why should I give you credibility?
Let me interrupt you with something else.
Do it.
First,
there's more of you than there. Well, actually, it's 3-3, so I was going to say there's more of you, but that's not true, really. We'll take you down if we have to.
The question is about Islamophobic, and the answer is it's absolutely not true. Because what we understand is Islam is a problem, and if it's going to be reformed, it's going to be reformed largely from within. Let me just give you one major example. There is a man by the name of Zudi Jasser. He's speaking down here, and I'm from Phoenix, and he spoke in Phoenix. The man is a Navy veteran. He is a doctor. He has formed an organization, and the concept is, yes, Islam can coexist in the United States. There is no hatred of the West or Christians or Jews, and there is no hatred of the Constitution, and we can practice Islam, says Zuhdi Jasser, and coexist, and that's the concept we're for. We couldn't be more happy, we couldn't be more in favor of anybody, because we know that the more people he gets on his side, the better off it's going to be for America, and the better off it's going to be for Islam. So that's the point. There is no anti-Islam as a group. It's just we want to do away with some of the practices which are hurting the United States and definitely hurting them as well.
The organization, by the way, that he is president of is called the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. People can, you know, search for that on the web and learn all about it. But he's a major force in trying to make sure, for example, that Sharia law is not implemented in the United States, that there is this separation that is true of all other religions besides Islam, that they don't, that people of that of the various religions, Christianity, Judaism, Hindus, Buddhists, can live in various countries around the world, and in any freedom-loving country, they are free to participate, to practice their religion, and not to impose any of their religious tenets on non-practitioners. But in Islam, there are many rules. Living under an Islamic government that require non-Muslims to behave there in many ways. And, for example, they don't have rights in Islamic courts. They don't have rights in the governmental court system. And these kinds of things are just absolutely alien to American history, to American values. This is why the question of whether we can live together, we can, as long as there are people like Dr. Zuhdi Jasser who believe Sharia law should not be imposed on the rest of us, and they practice their religion separately from imposing it on others.
Okay, well, and what I just, you know, what little I know of Islam and the Sharia law aspect in particular, that actually is paramount over any other law, which is the part where we get into a huge problem, because our Constitution should be the bottom line here. But Sharia law, it doesn't recognize that. It won't recognize that. And so,
right, because they consider it man-made law.
Right.
And the only law that Muslim countries believe in, so to speak, is the law from what they call God, and they believe that that's defined by their Quran, which their sacred books such as the Quran, the primary sacred book, which they consider to be the absolute word of God, and their hadith, the sayings and the practices of Muhammad that have been recorded since the times, basically soon after he died. And all of that is what they really adhere to, and that is imposed on non-Muslims who live under their rule. And that's been true since the time of Muhammad.
The Brigitte Gabriel, the founder of Act for America, kind of takes this approach, and I think it's a smart approach. Our focus is radical Islam, and so the question is, if you say that most Muslims are not involved with this, then we're confused. And what she said is, unfortunately, that Zuhdi Jasser and this Shireen Quddousi, a young Muslim lady that we know here up in Orange County, are desperately trying to reform Islam, but they're a tiny minority. And the way Brigitte looks at it is, most Muslims are not evil, and most Muslims don't want to impose this on us, but they're irrelevant because they're either ignorant or in denial of what the radicals are doing and the agendas being pushed by the radicals, and there are millions of them. So that's kind of the overall perspective. You don't want to throw out the good people with the bad, but there's an awful lot of people who are just irrelevant in it because they don't understand. You know, like most Christians and Jews, most Muslims have not read the Quran. They're dependent on what they're told or what an imam tells them.
Sure.
And there's some that are in denial. There's some, yes, that are not telling the truth. And there's some that have just been deceived. They've been told these myths that Islam has led the way in eliminating slavery and led the way in women's rights. If you go to, for instance, the Council on Arab American Relations, their website, or you look at any of these Muslim Brotherhood organizations, they're publishing literature and they're misinforming people, just telling absolute untruths about the history of Islam. So there's an awful lot of people on all sides that are just terribly misinformed.
Well, and at the end of the day, my understanding is that in the Quran, it's okay to lie to non-Muslims in order, because the whole purpose is the, what is it, the Islamitization? Is there a T in the middle?
Conversion. Yeah, there are some very, very troubling passages in the Quran. That is one of them. There's passages that talk very negatively about Christians and Jews and apostates. And the problem comes in that an awful lot of people are given just the more tolerant and nice passages, because those do exist in the Quran as well. Well, there was a problem, and it was a problem that was confronted by Muslim scholars, because they'd look at the Quran and they'd say, here's this very tolerant passage, and here's this other passage that's talking about hate, and here's this passage talking about people of the book, and then there's this passage about the people of the book are so terrible. So
the people of the book are?
Jews and Christians.
There you go.
And so the way Muslim scholars decided to resolve these internal contradictions within the Quran, they came up with a thing called the Doctrine of Abrogation. And the Doctrine of Abrogation basically says that the latter passages are the more accurate ones. In other words, the more perfect knowledge that Muhammad was giving out came in the later parts of the things he said. Now, the problem with that is most of the intolerant, hateful, and difficult, troubling, anti-democratic passages are in the latter parts of the Quran. So that's kind of the nub of the problem here. Without a reformation within Islam, which somehow deals with these terrible, intolerant passages and somehow purges the Quran of those passages or in some way modifies them, there's a serious problem, because there's religious text and there's religious leaders who support 100% the more troubling passages. Hence, the rationale for all the terrorists around the world who will immediately go to those passages as their rationale for doing the terrible things they're doing.
Mike, is it true that the Quran is laid out similar to the Bible, where you have a New and Old Testament, and the newer version or the first version was a more peaceful version, and the second or New Testament is what you're talking about?
It's more chronological. See, when Muhammad first started out, he tried to spread Islam in a fairly peaceful way, and that was not very successful. So as it became more obvious that he had to use more forceful ways to spread Islam, the rationale for doing more forceful ways and using violence to spread Islam, it was a chronological thing. The problem with the Quran is it's not organized.
It's not organized chronologically at all. The Quran was written well after Muhammad had died. And when they put it together, they basically ordered it from longest passage to shortest passage. And, from longest passage to shortest passage. So there is no chronological, there is no thematic organization in it, and it's quite, therefore, in some ways, hard to follow. But if you look on the internet, for example, one can find sources that will give you the chronological order of the Quranic passages. And the other thing is that it's basically divided into two periods from a thematic point of view, the period called the Meccan period and the period called the Medina period. And when, in the beginning, for the first dozen or a little bit more than that years that Muhammad was apparently receiving revelations, that was called the Meccan period. And it's a quite benign period. He had a lot of actual, there were a lot of Christians and Jews actually in Arabia when Muhammad was living. And those Christians and Jews had a pretty big influence. And monotheism was already beginning to take hold in Arabia. So that there was, as I mentioned, quite a bit of influence on Muhammad about the from Jews and Christians and from their teachings. Now, when he was not accepted as a prophet in Mecca and was not and was not able to really gain hold with his teachings, he moved to a town called Yathrib, actually. It was renamed Medina, which is means city of the prophet. But it was, when he moved there, a city called Yathrib. And when he moved there, he began, when people, the people of Yathrib disagreed with him, actually it was a community that had a quite a significant population of Jews. And when he went there, they, he actually ended up becoming more and more belligerent as he faced Jews and Christians eventually who rejected him as a prophet, who did not believe that he was a real prophet. And so as he was rejected by monotheistic religions in particular, and eventually by, and certainly by pagan religions, which were also quite prevalent in Arabia, as a leader, he became much more warlike, much more belligerent, and much more brutal, so that he actually butchered an entire community of men that were a Jewish community, over about 800, they say. Now, this is all documented in Muslim history. This is not something that you can say, oh, well, this is some interpretation of the West. This is all very seriously documented in sacred texts, the Hadith, that are involved in Islamic history.
Okay, Linda, so, we have to take a really quick break, or we'll be sure. Up against the top of the hour. When we come back, though, we need to do that part. And the other thing, maybe we want to roll it over to the 10 o'clock hour, but people are curious about the examples of errors and distortions and all that kind of thing.
Maybe we should just roll it to the 9 o'clock hour.
I mean the 9 o'clock hour, yeah. The 10 o'clock hour, we'll be off doing something else. Sorry, I time traveled there for a second. Everybody's like, what? What time is it?
I think you just gave Don heart failure.
Either that or Don just rolled over and hit the snooze button. All right, sorry about that. Okay, I've not meant to do this program alone, apparently. And Bill, you can't just ask one question every hour. That just won't fly. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Yeah, that was a smackdown.
Hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Some walking, some talking, some stuck in their kill. Got Social Security, but it doesn't pay your bills. There are addictions to feed and there are mouths to pay. So you bargain with the devil, but you're okay for today. Say that you love them, take their money and run. So it's been swell, sweetheart, but it was just got to call, so get out on the streets, girls, and bust you up. But who will say, hey, oh, when it comes.
Wow. Welcome back to We the People. We just found the person with the largest set of lungs in North America. Who was that?
That was Jewel back in her pop alternative period. She's country these days.
Okay, that's confusing. And the name of that, We Will Save Your Soul?
Who Will Save Your Soul?
Trying to read it from really far away. Wow. I wish I could hold a note that long. I wish I could hold my breath that long. So anyway, on that happy note...
We have 5 minutes.
On that happy note, we have 5 minutes. Or the news will cut us off. Thank you, Bob. Hey, okay, so do you guys want to do the list of inaccuracies next hour? at 9:05.
Yeah, why don't we do that next hour, if I can just finish up on this abrogation concept that Mike introduced.
Exactly. And also this hadith thing, for those of us who don't know what that is.
Okay. What I was mentioning about the Quran, that it was written from basically longest passage to shortest passage, so there's no real intrinsic logic to the order of it. What happened, though, in fact, is that the Meccan period, the earliest writings of Muhammad, were more benign and more, quote, peaceful oriented, and as he spread Islam throughout Arabia, it became far more belligerent, far more brutal, and many of the earlier passages were abrogated. Tolerance for people of the book, that is Christians and Jews, they were not tolerated anymore because they did not recognize him as a prophet, and it became okay if once they were told what his teaching was, they didn't accept him, then it became okay to give them the choice of either living under extreme oppression, that is, under rules of extreme oppression, and as minority peoples that would have to pay high, high taxes, so that they were giving money to this expansive theological political system of Islam, so that it could expand and become supreme in the world, because it was the one true religion, as Muhammad taught. And so either they were going to become members of it, or they were going to live as what are called dhimmis, second-class citizens, or oppressed people, under the rule of Islam, pay extremely high taxes so that Islam could spread, that was a way, for example, for it to enrich itself. Or they were going to end up getting slaughtered or exiled. And this is the way, in many cases, Islamic history progressed. Now, there are times when there were rulers within the caliphate, which is rulers of Islam in the 14th centuries of its history, that were much more tolerant, as we like to use the word. But, in fact, minority populations were always subjugated populations in Islam. Always. So the later passages, as I mentioned, when we say abrogated, they sort of replace the earlier ones. So those are the passages where you find references to Christians and Jews as, for example, apes and pigs, or you find examples where it is okay to kill them in order to expand Islam. And it is certainly required to tax them highly and impose extreme restrictions on them, give them no rights in courts, etc., etc. And these, eventually, rules which define Sharia law were fixed in schools of jurisprudence that existed in the Middle Ages. And they, for example, there's a book called Reliance of the Traveler, which documents really significantly what Sharia law is about. And it's called a classic manual of Islamic sacred law. This is a book that has
Linda,
both the Arabic translated
note,
and Arabic.
The news is going, on that note, the news is going to cut us off. We'll be right back. We have 5 minutes to reload our coffee. You're here with We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
We the People coming up on KCNR, Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Whoa.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. You are listening to Aaron, Bill, and Bob here in the studio. And on the other end of the phone, we have Linda, Jim, and Mike down in San Diego talking to us about Islam and how it's portrayed in school textbooks here in California and across the country. These guys have done a ton of research, and the first hour kind of laid the groundwork on some of the beliefs of Islam. We learned some new things, like I didn't know that the Quran was organized from longest passage to shortest passage rather than chronologically, because that's nonsensical, and I never would have thought of that. Bizarre. I still can't wrap my mind around that. It must, I mean, I've never read it, so it must read like a puzzle. I guess maybe that's the point. Anyway, if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, we are putting up links that we get from these guys as we're going through the program, and the archive is there if you would like to listen to the first hour and or send the program to your friends. So, all that being said, we're back. Who wants to pick up the ball and run with it?
I'll pick it up. This is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Let me first tell you the way we did it. The textbook that we reviewed has 60 pages dedicated to Islam. The kids spend about 2 weeks on these chapters. It's mandated by the state. So what we did, we each took 20 pages. Linda took the first 20. I took the middle 20. Jim took the last 20. And that's the way we did our research. So what I'll do now is I'll give you a few examples of the errors, the omissions, the distortions that I came up with. We'll go right around the table here, and we'll focus on some of the things that each of us found. And I should tell you, too, that when we did this research and then when we wrote our document, we were really, really careful. We'd go back and forth. We didn't want to exaggerate. We didn't want to be too demonstrative. We didn't want to make accusations. And we'd act like a governor because it's easy to get real excited and upset. But we wanted this document to be strictly one of fact and accuracy, and we went over it over and over and over again, and that's pretty much what we've created. And within the document, there's a section that can be excised right out, taken from our document, and given to the kids to give them the accurate information. And I'll start off with one related to slavery. And on page 67, paragraph 2 of the textbook, it simply says, the Quran encourages Muslims to free slaves. Now, that could not be more inaccurate. The way they stretch to say something like that, within Islam, there are certain rules about when you take slaves, how you take slaves, and that you're allowed to do it in jihad, in other words, in religious war, but not in other forms of battle. So they extrapolate that, and they deceive. So the kid walks away from reading this, wow, they wanted to free slaves, which is a total distortion of what's happened in history. And within our analysis, we give chapter and verse. We have experts like Bernard Lewis, who we have quotes from Bernard Lewis saying specifically how that was inaccurate. And we also have quotes from the Quran itself. Another example is on page 67, paragraph 2, it says, also, women in Arabia had few rights. The Quran describes rights of women, including rights to own property, earn money, and get an education. Again, what they do is there are certain passages that give certain women certain amount of rights, but the overwhelming lack of rights that women within Islam have is distorted, and the kids will get an inaccurate view of the way women have been treated both historically, and it doesn't take a whole lot of reading to see what's happening in the Islamic world today. Another example, page 67, paragraph 3. And I'm quoting, another important subject in the Quran has to do with jihad, which means to make an effort or to struggle. Jihad refers to the inner struggle people go through in their effort to obey God and behave according to Islamic ways. Jihad can also mean a struggle to defend Islam and the Muslim community. When they say also can, it gives the impression that the overwhelming meaning and use of jihad is a peaceful one. And again, that's terribly inaccurate, and the kids are getting a distorted view of Islam and the text of the Quran. And I'll turn it over to Jim, because Jim has a couple of pretty dramatic examples of how the violence of this, of Islam is downplayed in the textbook.
On page 90, it talks about, it says, I'm quoting, the Ottoman Empire reached its height under Suleiman the Magnificent. during Suleiman's rule, it said from 1520 to 1566, the Ottomans took control of the eastern Mediterranean and pushed farther into Europe. Okay. And then it says that, and this is just a, not a quote, but discussion, says, during Suleiman's rule, the Ottoman Empire reached its cultural peak. Pay attention to this, cultural peak. Muslim poets wrote beautiful works. We're limited here because the three of us, and although Linda plays a violin, she doesn't have one with her. So you just have to imagine it in the background. Muslim poets, I'm in tears myself.
How about harp
Muslim
music?
Muslim poets wrote beautiful works, and architects worked to turn Istanbul from a Byzantine city into a Muslim one. Well, here's what we found. We went to many, many different references, and we found what was omitted from the book. It says here that took control. They use the word took control there. And actually, they don't say how brutally that the Muslims took control of other people. And then it says here that there was a war, and this is left out again from the book. It says there was a war between the Ottomans with the Hungarians, and they killed thousands of the Hungarians during the war. But the point is, they took prisoners, 2,000 Hungarian prisoners. Okay, now these are prisoners. But what they left out was that the prisoners were taken by Suleiman the Magnificent, who was very interested in art and architecture. These 2,000 prisoners, they were beheaded.
Oh, oopsie.
And their heads were impaled on pikes, decorating the surroundings of his tent, okay? And then thousands or more of them were carried back to Constantinople. But these 2,000 were... Now, I majored in economics. I was not an art major. So it's very possible, you know, and you know better than I do, it's very possible that cutting off the heads of 2,000 Hungarian prisoners and putting them on pikes and putting them around your tent, that very well could be art. I don't really know.
Well, I can help you out. I was an English major, and so, when I hear that, I take the words for what they mean, and it's bad. So it's not art. We can
it's
say
not
that
art.
Now. No, it's
okay,
not art.
I'd like to be able to quote you in the future, because I give this example, and many people don't really know if it's art, but I will use you.
Let's do
a reference.
Let's do a small sampling, Bob. Heads on pikes, art?
Not art.
Art's down. Bill?
Were they smiling?
Oh.
Yes, yeah, see, we don't know if they were smiling or not. That's possible.
Jim, I want you to dig
smiling.
A little deeper.
They may have been smiling in the beginning, but maybe when the heads were taken off, they stopped smiling. But again, we don't know all the details.
Of course, okay. but the fact that they were headless, that pretty much, you know, when somebody says, and it ends in a headless, you don't even have to go any further. The violin music stops for me.
And you can go around with us and give information. So the point is, it's so bizarre what they write here. Now, here is what's really interesting, I think. We finally got the information from the school to the principals to the publisher, and here is what the publisher said. The publisher said about the text, which we read, the text is accurate in its presentation of facts about Suleiman I and the period of his rule. Now, here's the funny part. I don't know if they meant it to be funny. It should be noted that the content of the histories written for adult audiences, such as the sources were cited by the reviewers, that's us, are not generally viewed by educators as appropriate for young audiences. So the point is, they put in art and architecture. We went around to various sources and found out about the beheading and putting on spikes, putting around a tent, and the publisher said, that's not for the young audiences. However, what we know, who've had children and grandchildren in the 7th and 8th grades, that if you look at the movies they see, the video games they
see. Yeah, no kidding. That's what I was thinking.
You know, it really wouldn't hurt the little dears to find out that these Hungarian prisoners were beheaded. So essentially what they wanted to do was to omit the things they didn't want people to know, pure and simple. And this happens over and over and over again, page after page. Mike will probably tell you how to get a copy of our report if you don't have one, but this is what you'll see in page after page. Okay.
Jim was on a rant.
One additional thing, when this was a huge piece of history, when obviously when Constantinople, the eastern, really the eastern capital of the Christian Empire at the time, the Byzantine Empire, this was a very important trade city, a very, very important part of the center of Christianity in the world. And when the Muslims came in and Suleiman took, you know, came in and effectively conquered the Christian Empire, at the time, many, like 50 to 60,000 Christians were enslaved and sent all over the, from Constantinople alone. And then, of course, it was changed to the name Istanbul. Churches were turned into mosques. And slavery was rampant at the time. And it was slavery that helped spread Islam throughout Europe, throughout Asia, and throughout Northern Africa. Slavery helped them because they enslaved the young boys to become soldiers. All of this history, and in particular, like Mike mentioned about slavery, slavery was institutionalized by Islamic empires.
So to bring that into current time, they were for slavery before they were against slavery.
Yeah.
How inconvenient. And, you know, another thing that's an odd little coinky-dink, and we didn't actually plan this, is that the 9/11 trials are going on this weekend. And oddly enough, we're doing a little historical updating for folks. So I hope people are listening before they go watch the show, I suppose I should call it. Let's take a swift break. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us on the web, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Dominance. Submission.
Dominance.
Submission. Submission.
Dominance.
Submission.
Oh, I like that one, Bob. A little Blue Oyster Cult.
And a cheerful song at that. And it's amazing how many shows we do that song is appropriate. Give us some history, Bob.
Blue Oyster Cult, 1974.
1974, okay, just checking. That's because Bill's older than I am. That's how come he knows that. I was in junior high, and I wasn't allowed to listen to Blue Oyster Cult. Actually,
yes,
I didn't know they existed yet.
They were pretty cutting edge for 1974, and some of their songs have proven to be timeless. Don't Fear the Reaper being another one.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, I feared the Reaper. I don't even remember the Reaper in 74.
Bad, Bill. All right, back to Islam. Back to the cheerful topic of Islam. Always a source of fun. Do you guys ever just find yourself just, you know, banging your head against the desk in the book club? Did this eat the book club, by the way, or is the book club still existed?
No, the book club still exists. They're not really involved with this. We just met at the book club. And yet, it does, you know, it is easy to get overwhelmed and get negative. But by actually doing something,
absolutely,
you feel better. It makes a big, big difference. I mean, politically, you see that now. Everybody's upset and they're moaning and what. If you actually do something, get behind a candidate, do something political, it really makes a difference because you feel like you're being effective, and it offsets that kind of overwhelming doom that seems to come over so many of us.
Well, you just every time you look
you know, you shine a flashlight in the corner and it's like, more dust.
Yeah, I know.
It's just, you know, never finished.
Too, we're down to one phone here, so if we get disconnected, we'll call you right back on the cell phone, okay?
One phone.
Our batteries are quickly dissipating here.
Wow. You guys don't have a speaker element?
There is a speaker element on one of the phones, but when the battery goes, that's it. So.
Oh, you don't have a bass thing. Okay, so
my bass. In fact, let me just check that my bass doesn't do it, unfortunately.
Oh. Well, don't meet at Mike's. I guess what we've learned today is don't meet at Mike's house if you want
right.
to talk on three phones. Or bring your own battery.
I have bagels and coffee, so that was good.
Oh, that is an upside. Okay, so talk to us about Act for America. Did you get involved with them before you discovered all this or after?
The way I got involved with Act for America was the also through the book club in a sense. We read Brigitte's first book, which was kind of her biography of what happened to her, Brigitte Gabriel, who's the founder of Act for America. She's a Mennonite Christian who was born in Lebanon and pretty much grew up during the Civil War and was the victim, both herself and her family, of PLO violence. As a young lady, she was injured and severely injured, and then she recovered, and then her mom was injured. And I read this book, and I read her whole biography, and heard about this organization called Act for America, which was her grassroots national security organization that she started in America to alert people to the dangers of radical Islam and educate and the rest. So I checked out and said, is there a San Diego chapter? And there wasn't at the time, so I contacted ACT and signed some papers, and lo and behold, about 3 years ago, I was the chapter leader here in San Diego. And we've been working on a number of issues over the years, and probably the most dramatic thing that kind of got me on board with misinformation, I guess it's almost three summers ago now, there's the local marketing person, public relations director for CARE here in San Diego, a guy named Hopida, was giving a speech at the downtown library in San Diego. That, you know, it's a typical big downtown library. It has a room that seats about 200. And he was giving a lecture on Islamophobia. So I said, okay. Someone emailed me. He's talking. It was a Sunday afternoon. I went down. I listened to him. He had about 30 people there, maybe 25, something like that. And he did his whole 90-minute slide presentation telling the world that the big problem in America is not the threat of at radical Islam, but Islamophobia. And he went on and on, a young man. He was a Filipino who converted to Islam post-9/11. And he had what really irritated me. He had one particular slide. And on that slide, he had the names and the titles of and the authors of a bunch of books like Brigitte Gabriel, like Hersey Ali, like Robert Spencer, a number of the books that describe the dangers of radical Islam. And in a library, he was telling people to avoid these books.
Mm.
And he also said that the books were written to exploit Islam, that these people weren't experts. He said, why were all these published after 9/11? Well, it seems to me it's pretty clear in a free market society, books get published when there's interest. And post 9/11, there was a lot of interest in this subject. And what he didn't tell the audience, almost all these authors were advocating and lecturing and writing about this subject pre 9/11. So, well, I was upset, so I called the public library the next morning on Monday and said, okay, you've hosted him. You've advertised it on the city's letterhead and on the city's website. It's my turn. Let me have an opportunity to give the other side. And I spoke to two or three officials at the library, and you could tell they were afraid. They didn't know who I was. They thought I was going to raise all kinds of hell. They were not pleased. So I made a call to the mayor's office, and lo and behold, in a few days, I get a call back. I've got a date, and they were going to put it up on their website and put it on their letterhead just as they did for Mr. Hopida. Well, as soon as the Council for CARE, Council for American Islamic Relations, found out, they started an internet and publicity campaign to discredit me and to discredit ACT. And it was an education for me because I hadn't done this much. And on the internet, you'd go to Reuters, you'd go to Yahoo News, and there's what appeared to be an article. And what they did is they put a press release out, and unless people read the bottom small print at the end of what appeared to be a news article, they'd find out it was a press release. And they were saying terrible things about me. They said I shouldn't be able to speak unless I have an imam up there with me. Long and short of it is, we raised a lot of interest, sent out a lot of emails ourselves, and the director of the library let me proceed to give my talk. And I had really never spoken publicly to any kind of a group prior to that. And fortunately, we filled the room. We had standing room only. We had a wonderful assortment. We had veterans. We had people from all over San Diego. The police were there. They were worried there'd be some kind of violence. They really thought that we were going to do something terrible. Even the library officials, within 30 seconds of my making my presentation, were warning me, you know, don't incite anybody. Don't get upset. Don't say hateful things. None of which happened. We had a wonderful day. There was probably 10 to 15% in the audience that were from the Islamic community here in San Diego. It was civil. They asked their questions. And we made a big, big point to the library, because the library had been cooperating with CARE for years and years. CARE has been helping select books for the library.
Oh, that's great.
They had been doing, you know, the sensitivity training for the library's employees, hence their fear of me. So that was kind of my big introduction into this whole process. And we actually were very successful. Even the Muslims in the audience asked civil questions. They got civil answers. And, of course, Mr. Hopaida did not show up. Now, he had a couple of his people there with a video camera videotaping. But, you know, I went and I listened to him, and I listened to his diatribe, and he didn't have the courtesy to come and listen to the other side, which is pretty typical in these situations. They do not want to listen to the other side, and they don't want to even debate on these sort of things.
Wow. And you know, that's the difficult part, because if they won't debate and you can't trade facts, then you're just a hater. You know, I mean, that's what we get all the time, you know, global warming and, you know, the science about taking out dams and just all these different things. Well, that's just the way it is. You're not a scientist, or basically they don't say anything. They don't have a factual comeback. It's just you're a hater.
It's much, much easier to call somebody a name or try to categorize them than to deal with the facts. When we wrote our analysis and we were dealing with the local school board, there was a woman, her name is Tashin Lassoni, and she's the director of the Muslim Speakers Bureau here in San Diego. And what she said is that we were inflammatory and that we had some subterfuge, some other agenda. But to show how weak their arguments are, within our analysis, we talk about an excerpt in the Quran where it very, very clearly permits men to beat their wives. You can read a half dozen different translations of the Arabic, and it's permissible to beat your wife. There's no question in the text. So when she writes her reply to us, she says, no, 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 no. The proper translation is politely tap. And it shows the total ridiculousness of it. She comes up with politely tap when the text says you can beat. And that's the kind of thing we're running into.
Gosh, you know, and that totally works for parents. You know, I'm sure no parents are getting called on the carpet for politely tapping their kids.
That's right.
Because we use that for everything, right? Politely tap. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
That's just nutty. So we should take a really quick break. So what I wanted to know from you, what was the most egregious example? And actually, maybe before we're running out of time, I guess we've got about a half hour, but definitely want to know what happened when you went to the school. You know, we don't want to skip that whole side of the story. When you went to the school, when you went to the school district,
absolutely.
You know, what did they say, and what has happened as a result of this, and what can other people do? Because I'm sure there's people out there going, hey, I wonder if they're, you know, hiding around in our textbooks. We better go do something. Let's give folks a roadmap so they don't have to go find out. All right, you're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
pieces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces, sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces, tell lies, and I got.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
You've been telling me you're a genius since you were 17. In all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
Welcome back to We the People Radio. We're speaking with Mike Hyuton from San Diego about the teachings of Islam in our public schools. And Mike, I had a question. We haven't talked a lot about Sharia law and how that is spreading in the United States. And I was hoping maybe you could touch on that a little bit before we run out of time.
How it's spreading in the United States now is basically there's a bunch of efforts to allow exceptions, and Linda's talked a little bit earlier about allowing Sharia law into our legal system. Now, so far we're lucky. We're not like England, where there's, I guess, now 60 or 70 civil courts where Sharia law is practiced. But there's a million different efforts around the country to do that sort of thing here. ACT has got a number of states who are trying to pass legislation that would generically insist that American law be followed, not specifically excluding Sharia law, explicitly excluding any law that violates American precepts of legal precepts. So that's happening all over the country. The other problem is Sharia is like in the textbooks, and of course you see what's happening in our universities, where there's just blatant disinformation being disseminated within the liberal arts classes. And the way that goes back, that's a little bit more clear than this. Saudi Arabia has spent millions and millions of dollars funding seats at Harvard, at Georgetown, at SC. Brigitte goes down a list of all the universities where we actually have dissertations that have been done over the last 10 or 15 years in these departments of disinformation. And the terrible thing is the new grad students come up and the literature they're using to learn is a disinformation that was given by the dissertations and the PhDs in the past that were being taught at institutions funded with Saudi money. It's perverse. I have two kids in college right now, and I know for a fact in the liberal arts classes that's probably the most dramatic spot. And the only advice I'd give people is if your kids can get involved in something other than liberal arts, have them do it, unless they've been immunized at home, unless they're going to college with a firm grasp of what the truth is. We should avoid those kids taking classes of that sort. And I think that Aaron asked that Linda, one of us, give the most egregious example in the textbook.
Yeah.
And Linda's got a good one.
Hit it, Linda.
yeah, sure. Well, this is a kind of an interesting one because, in fact, it isn't even, we didn't even document it in our study, in our analysis. We so concentrated on errors of a historical nature. Historical accuracy was what we were interested in. We really had, we followed California state guidelines on what is to be taught in history. And so by doing that, we were absolutely careful not to be castigating or casting aspersions on the religion of Islam and only focusing on Islamic history. But remarkably, within these 60 pages teaching Islamic history in the Middle Ages, there are two solid pages of a quote from the Quran, a passage of the Quran directly. This passage, this really violates state standards, absolutely violates the state standard. The book should have been disqualified because they're not supposed to have direct religious material in their textbooks. And and certainly not 2 pages of the Quran, and I have no idea, if you look at these 2 pages from the Quran, what are the kids supposed to learn from it? How can they possibly assimilate this 2 solid pages of a surah that and learn what it truly means? So it's really inappropriate. It violates state standards, and yet this textbook was approved in the state of California. We are now following through on that through the process of the because what happened to us, Michael, talk a little bit about what we did. When we first found these problems, we brought it to the attention of a principal and history teacher at the local Carmel Valley Middle School. They recommended that we go and see the associate superintendent and the curriculum director. When we went to see them and told them about these significant problems in the textbook, they sympathized with us and asked us if we would produce a supplement. They suggested a supplement. We were very interested in doing such a thing, and we spent, as Mike said, really hundreds of hours working on that, each one of us. And we produced this supplement in time for the 2010 school year. And now I'll let Mike kind of describe the process after the supplement got produced and we delivered it to the superintendent in time for the school year.
We gave them this supplement, and the assistant superintendent and the director of curriculum, both of whom I knew because through my kids in the school district, and they did seem sympathetic. They were former history teachers. So what they said they'd do, we're going to submit this document to a group of our history teachers, and then we'll determine whether we want to use all of it or part of it or how we want to use it. Months passed by. The bottom line is they come back to us, and they said that the history teachers were uncomfortable with some of the references we used, that they were politicized or biased. Now, I will acknowledge that there's some of the sources we used have become politicized over time, but some of our other sources, like Bernard Lewis and direct quotes from the Quran, can hardly be called biased or politicized. But for whatever reason, they turned us down. So at that point, we were considering, what are we going to do? They said maybe in a year or so, they might add one lesson plan in one class, and it would say, well, here's one opinion, here's the other opinion. And we were not satisfied with that, so we decided we'd go before the local school board. So we went to a school board meeting, and we made our pitch. We described what we've done, what we thought should be done, and the school board listened. It wasn't a dialogue. They didn't ask us any questions. And after a period of time, they voted unanimously to send our document up to the state of California, the Department of Education. What had happened in the meantime, this same woman in the community had gotten in the press and said we were inflammatory and we had an anti-Islam agenda, and they ran this stuff by their lawyers, and they got scared. And since it's a textbook that's used throughout California, they sent it up to the state. So all this takes place over many, many months. The Department of Education takes it. The short of it is they sent our analysis to the publisher. The publisher responded with a very, very unimpressive defense of their points. And the state of California decided that they'll go with the publisher because the publisher's defending what they did. Now, what we've been trying to do is get political pressure on the state school board members to put us on one of their meeting agendas so we can give our pitch for 30 minutes before them. So far, they haven't agreed to do that. They're going with what the department said. The publisher defended their book, and we're going to stick with that. Now, we know full well, if we're given a half hour in front of the school board, that the Jerry Brown appointees are not going to jump up and say, oh, yeah, that's a wonderful supplement, we're going to put it in every classroom. But we'd like to get up there because we'd like to get the attention. We'd like the media, because our pitch now pretty much is the more parents and the more students are able to read our analysis, and we have no problem, read our analysis side by side with the textbook and come to your own conclusions. We will trust people to come to the right conclusions. So that's pretty much where it stands. The other thing that Linda has done, and it's pretty impressive, there's over 250 pages of standards and curriculum guidelines. And initially we thought that our battle would be when the new textbook adoption process comes up,
to change the standards. But in reviewing the standards, what we've concluded is that the book as it exists is in violation of the standards. And we're considering that. We're trying to get some legal pro bono help. We think there might be grounds to bring a case against the state of California for violating their own standards.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah, I can give you some examples of these extraordinary standards that are within the framework. If people can go online and look up California Department of Education history standards, and they will find things like this. I'm quoting here. Students should be aware of the presence or absence of the rights of the individual, the rights of minorities, the right of the citizen to participate in government, the right to speak or publish freely, the right of trial by jury. And this is for in both Western and non-Western countries. They're supposed to be aware of these rights. They cannot derive whether Islamic nations have provided such rights by reading this textbook. Another example of a quote from the standards: students should understand the intense religious passions that have produced fanaticism and war, as well as the political arrangements such as separation of church and state that allow different groups to live amicably in a pluralistic society. This is not made clear in this textbook, that under Islam there are the difference between living as a Muslim in an Islamic nation versus living as a Christian, for example. And then
what it appears is they wrote, the standards are actually pretty good, and they talk about pluralism, they talk about American values and what's unique about America, and our kids have to be taught these things and how they contrast with other nations and other cultures. But when they wrote these standards, I'm quite sure they didn't have the teaching of Islam in mind. So then when it came to teaching those chapters and producing those documents, they were in a bind because the publishers and the other influences were such that all that was supposed to be glossed over. And so that's where we are today. The standards are not bad, but the standards in these chapters are definitely being violated.
And the other thing is, I looked at the textbook as a whole, the history, for example, of the Crusaders, the history of the Mongols during this period of time. Those chapters are much more descriptive of what really happened. They talk about the brutal history. They talk about the lack of rights given maybe to people in minorities. They make it very clear that, you know, that during the Inquisition, what happened. And yet, in our chapter, all it does is talk about how Islam spread. It sounds like it's honey on hot toast. It's just ridiculous how it's been whitewashed in terms of adjectives within our chapter to actually describe what happened, as Jim was so vividly describing to you earlier, in terms of the brutality, in terms of the jihad savagery. One other quote from the standards within California is this, quote, explanations are provided so that students clearly understand the likely causes of events, the reasons the people and events are important, why things turned out as they did, and the connection of those results to events that followed, end quote. Using our textbook, there's no way for today's middle school students to connect the dots between the inherent inequality, intolerance, and jihadi savagery of early Islam to today's most dangerous actors in the world. And this is why we believe the true history is vitally important to our survival in this post-9/11 world.
Very cool. We need to take a swift break here. We're going to come back in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Guess my opinion is all out of style.
Oh, but don't get me started, because I can get right. I'll make a fight for the forefathers' plan.
That's right. And the world already knows where I stand.
And I'm for the Bible, and I'm for the flag, and I'm for the working man. Me and no head, I'm just one of many, can't get no
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep up you. And I don't know if I can do it. Oh no, I've said too much. I haven't said.
Yeah, that's what my dad used to say all the time. You haven't said enough. Please, talk more.
I don't really think he said that to you.
My dad's on his way here now from Nevada. He's going to come and flick me in the forehead like he used to do when we were kids. Oh, my goodness. All right, so we've been goofing off in the chat room. It's lightened our mood a little bit. And if you don't join us in the chat room on Sunday mornings...
I hope he just tapped you on the forehead.
No. What did he do, Linda? Did he... What was it called? He lightly swatted us? No.
Politely tapped.
Politely tapped us. That's right. I've got to, it's funny. It so didn't happen. I have a hard time with the lingo.
Ow, that wasn't polite.
It's so good to get Bill in the studio. I can't abuse Elizabeth like that. It's not right. Hey, okay, so we've got 6 minutes. No pressure, but we did have somebody ask in the chat room. They said, well, since you guys aren't academics, how do you feel how do you feel that you have standing?
That actually is a problem because we actually have a school district now that is willing to take our analysis and submit it to their curriculum committee, which would be a tremendous thing. It's a district, I don't want to mention where, but it's a district where the board is sympathetic and they've got a large popular amount of support for what we're doing, but they say exactly the same thing. And we're in the process now, I can't tell you how many, I probably got feelers out to, I don't know, a dozen different highly qualified academics to put the stamp of approval, to put their name or their organization on our analysis. We know that's a weakness. Now, we're 100% confident about the accuracy of what we've done, but unfortunately or fortunately, when you're dealing with schools, that's what they want. So we're in the process. Now, if anybody out there knows of, a PhD in history or Middle Eastern studies from a major university who would like a copy of our analysis, and we're willing to, alter it. We're not fixed that, it's not the perfect document, and we would do what was necessary. And the reality is, too, that if only two or three or four of these corrections got into the textbook, it'd be a tremendous, tremendous victory for us. If the truth about slavery or jihad or the treatment of women, or if we got the excerpts of the Quran removed from the textbook. I mean, it was funny because that was so obvious. Two whole pages of direct quotes from a religious text that would never, from the Torah or from the New Testament, they'd never permit it. And here it is right in front of us, and we went right by it because we're focusing exclusively on history.
Well, talk to me about the how is Sharia law portrayed in the text? I guess we talked about it, but we didn't talk about where you saw that in the textbooks. Was that part of it?
Our textbook doesn't go into great deal of on Sharia itself. I think at one point it might mention that Sharia is religious Islamic law, but it never makes any great detailed. Gives no great detail on information of what Sharia is and what the excerpts are and how it works.
And Jim, I heard you jumping in there.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, one of the questions raises, what information do we have is accurate? There's a writer by the name of Bernard Lewis, who's probably close to 100 years old now, and he's written, 15 books on the Middle East, and he's definitely an authority, and we've quoted him in several of the places. But you have to understand, the academic community, in one way, likes to protect itself, so unless they get their names with their 45 degrees in there, they don't want to know about it. But if you read Bernard Lewis, he's been writing about this for a long, long time, 1880s, 90s. You'll see what he says. And what he says is, we've quoted him in several places.
Cool. All right. So T-minus three and counting. Final thoughts?
Yeah, a few things. First of all, I want to thank both of you very much for giving us all this time. This is a tremendous public service, and we're extremely grateful. And just a few more things. One is, remember to try to get a copy. You don't have the link to my email, which is secureamerica@gmail.com, so people can actually read the document. And check out what's going on at your local school districts. You can go to the library, get a copy of the textbook, get a copy of the seventh grade, the two chapters on Islam, and, you know, read it, read our analysis, speak to the teachers and the principals. If you want, go to the school board, see if you have school board members who might be accommodating and receptive. Speak to local politicians, run for the school board, and I know that's a lot to ask because we've sat through a few of these meetings, and it's phenomenally tedious. It's unbelievable how much time is wasted at these meetings, but we need good people on the school boards. And of course, join Act for America, because there you're going to get weekly updates on everything that's going on with Sharia, with the threat of radical Islam, and they'll give you a dozen different ways you can help, not spending a lot of time, not spending a lot of money, but play an effort, because unless the public gets involved with this, things aren't going to change, and we understand that this is a very political year, and our particular cause isn't at the top of everybody's list, but this is a really critical issue. Getting accurate information to our kids in school, it's one of the most important things we can do.
Well, I think you guys have done the lion's share of the work. We're happy to get you on here so people can learn some things about this. And I guess the most important thing, I mean, we realize you guys don't come from the land of academia, and we don't come from the land of radio. We're just regular people, too. You know, so...
Well, one of us does.
Yeah. Okay, Bob. They're calling.
There?
They're
yeah.
calling for help. That was attack
no, no,
watch.
Okay. I think Linda tried to disconnect me there. She didn't like what I was saying. So.
Oh, sure. And chaos breaks out at the end.
I know.
Just when we said we don't come from the land of radio, everything malfunctions. But
yeah.
No, honestly, you know, you don't have to be an expert to look around and see that something is wrong. And if you wait for the experts to fix everything, well, I think we all know where that will get us.
That's right.
So we
Absolutely.
Hope that you find the experts that you need. We hope you'll come back on and let us know about that, and or have them come on the program and do a program for other people who are experts in this who can help folks around the country.
That'd be absolutely terrific. Again,
please,
I really appreciate the time you've given us.
Absolutely. Come on to the website, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll have the archive up, and you can send that to anybody you want. It has all the links on there, and any changes, please email us with it. We'll see you everybody next week. We are talking to Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show. Don't miss it.
There's a job to be done. Let's rule America. There's a battle to be won. Wake up, America. You're too young to die. Let's rule America. It's the good Lord's own.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Bill. Thanks to all of our guests. Don Shulman next at KCNR Shasta.